isn't just about attraction, and it then becomes very, very important how you communicate during conflict, of which attachment styles can massively play into, particularly if you've got two insecure attachment styles together. Where our life is now changing a bit more, it's a much more realistic approach to understand that you might not be with this person forever. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Single Girl's Guide to Life, your weekly guide to single life living and dating in your 20s, 30s and 40s. I'm Chantelle Dyson, a love and life coach, helping single women to bring love into their life in all forms, from self-love to the love of our friends and also romantic love too, as well as making sure that you are happy with your single life as you go along. Now, on today's episode, we're going to be delving into the idea of working out if somebody is compatible for you. Compatibility is the idea that you naturally align with one another, with another person, that it fits together in a particular way, a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle piece is coming to mind as I describe that. It's not about having to change yourself to fit in, but you have these natural factors that predominantly work together. And this is one of the stages that we overlook so much in dating. It's actually very easy to find people that we feel attracted to. It's very easy to feel that we have a connection with people. And it comes back to Matthew Huss's example of the kind of four stages that you go through, which is attraction, connection, and commitment. We're often quite happy with that bit. But he talks about the fourth stage of compatibility being so very difficult sometimes. And actually, it's a little bit disheartening at that point to realize that the person that you were attracted to, thought you had a connection with, and that you said you wanted to date exclusively or even started to call boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, that then the compatibility doesn't work. And you have to have committed. You have to have those foundational pieces to even start really considering compatibility for the longer term. Throughout dating, you are assessing if there is some level of compatibility. Initially, it's on attraction basis. It's often the sexual chemistry of how your energies fit together in that particular way. And you have an understanding of speaking to one another. You're establishing how often you talk, what time you spend together, how you spend that time together. And you feel like you can talk about particular topics in a way that maybe you don't with other people or with few people. And that's where the connection bit starts. You feel understood by that person, and that is ultimately what leads to the level of commitment that you decide upon. But it is the compatibility part that we forget, and that's where something that seemed hopeful is disappointing. It feels really difficult when that person seems so right, but in reality they were so wrong. And alongside that disappointment is the natural fact that this is tough work out there. It is not easy to find somebody that you actually want to be with. I did an episode previously and I was thinking in very, very basic terms, mathematically speaking, and even then I'm not even convinced all the maths behind it would be that great, but on a basic principle of roughly half the population might be for you in terms of sex slash gender, then you've got the idea around their age group. I didn't even go into location on mine, but it basically whittles the pool down at any given moment. And I was reading around on the topic and I found a Daily Mail article which they were reporting on a bit of research that was looking into the odds in dating from a group of researchers from the University of Bath. And they found that in the adult population at the time of publication, that of the 47 million adult population in the UK that they were looking at, only 84,500-ish people were suitable for any one other person, on average, of course, and that we're actually only attracted to about 18% of people each. And again, that's always going to change a bit more. Some people will be more attracted to more people and some will be attracted to less people. But on average, that's what we're looking at. They looked at the fact that obviously, if you're in a more urban area, your chances are higher, whereas in a rural area, your chances are lower. And they were saying your chances of finding love based on absolute fate on any given day is 1 in 562. And it just doesn't feel like there's a lot going on with that. So it's understandable that when we find someone that we think is maybe one of the 80 odd thousand people that are out there for us, we get disappointed when compatibility is the hurdle we fall at. But compatibility is so important because it isn't just about attraction. Attraction can, for many people, be really important. You want to have particular elements to your relationship. You want to get along. But there is a difference, as Esther Perel puts it, between a love story and a life story. Not everybody that you're going to create a life with will you love in a particular way. If you go back to Sternberg's triangular theory of love, we're all after that consummate love in the middle, which is very, very hard to get. And a lot of marriages, particularly ones that involve children and families, fall into the companionate love because the passion does go. You're dealing with the daily grind together. You're dealing with just getting up, getting the kids ready, going to work, coming home, looking after the kids, and maybe having, if you're lucky, an hour to yourself, if that's not filled with the backlog of laundry, of getting the house tidied up again. That's boring and mundane stuff that you have to do with someone. And I don't think giddy love is going to sit underneath that for a lot of it. That's hard work for a lot of people that have that vision. It's totally fine to have it, but the person that you're choosing to do that with is going to be very different to a very giddy kind of love that we often feel at the start, and you are looking at true compatibility. Now, you may still want to create a future that doesn't involve family life. You're entitled to do that, and I don't have the desire for my own children. I have a desire for a family, and I have open ideas to what that really looks like. I want to have that sense of belonging and building a life with someone together. But it's going to need to look a particular way. And there are some compatibility ideas that I've noticed through my own experiences and through the experiences I've heard of others of what really matters when we're going forwards. So today I want to share with you five of those compatibility checks that you should be naturally doing through your conversations. You don't have to sit there and do a tick list of these things, but through your natural development of the relationship, things should be coming up. So let's begin with one of the ones that I think is the most important thing. That is your values. Your values is something that I highly value in terms of understanding yourself. It's part of nearly every program I do. I refer to it if I don't run people through it. But knowing what are the most important things to you, the top 3 to 5, is vital to you understanding the decisions that you make in your life and why you make them and what it is that you prioritize that other people don't. It also really helps you to understand other people. So for example, my values do not feature the word family per se, but they do feature connection. And maybe someone would have grouped those together and they actually are synonymous to some people. But to me, it's not predominantly about family the way I perceive it. It's about belonging, connection, and like that group likeness. And it's based on connection to other people. Whereas other people tremendously value family and they will go round every week to have a Sunday roast. That's not, for example, in my routine. Now, that's not incompatible in some way, but you might find that that's going to cause some friction over time where I don't value family. I might feel frustrated at times that the family get so much attention and time. And maybe that's a challenge where we're finding time difficult at some point in the early stages of dating versus someone that then doesn't understand why I don't want to come to every family occasion every week. They've got to understand that family's not the biggest importance. So coming along when you're further down the line every other week is still as far as that person is willing to go. And that's what they're happy to compromise on. But there's a reason that they won't come along every week. And maybe to them, coming along to the family meal every week is really important. So whatever your values happen to be, it's understanding what they are so that you can sell them a little bit. You don't have to sit there and list them, though I have done that. And I think it's quite useful to just see what people say on instinct or if they go through the task that I do with people on it and have worked through that kind of process. Knowing what is important to you. So mine include connection, growth, creativity, autonomy. They're important to me. And they're very easy to understand in the things that I do. They literally inform what my life looks like. The creativity comes from what is behind me and the things I like to do in my life. It kind of also covers the word fun. So we're never just going to do things simply. There's going to be surprises. There's going to be adventures. Growth definitely shows how much I read and why I'm not interested in television, etc. It informs a set of states that I'm in and you can hierarchy them, although they're pretty much in contest with them all the time. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't value some family time. They're just not as important to me as those other things. And understanding your values means that you can communicate that through your conversations and you're listening to other people as to what they're saying. And you're, whether they say them explicitly or not, you're evaluating what their values are and if there's some overlap, if there's some that complement, or if there's some that are going to be incompatible and how incompatible they are. For example, someone being into health and fitness is probably not going to be a problem for me because I dabble in it. I'm in there a little bit, I do care about it, but it's not a priority for me. However, someone might treat it so much that they would expect their partner or would want someone that would at least encourage them or even come to the gym with them. And if that's not even on your radar at all, you're not even someone that casually does it, incompatibility. And that's okay. You're allowed to get to a point where you like that person, you thought you were getting along and you were going to say, let's do this. And then you realized they go to the gym every day. And that is so important to them. But I want to see them a bit more and they're not making the time for that. And it also depends on how willing people are to compromise on the relationship and how that sits within values, because connection to me is important. You know that then a relationship is going to have a place, particularly so, and someone else might have that and they might be able to manage it. But someone that maybe won't find the time, if they can't find the time, it's important to be able to do that. So values actually tells you a big overview because it feeds into the other ones, I think, that come up, which I'll go into in a bit. But values is number one. And if you don't know your values yet, I'm going to put a link to a video training that you can grab so that you can sit there and work them out. You can do it through journaling, but if you want a guided task to do, then I suggest you go and download that from the link in the description. The next one to understand is your communication style. You are not going to be perfect at communicating in a relationship unless you've had a number of relationships and you've practiced them and experienced all the different ways that other people interact with you. The challenge with any relationship of any kind is that you are interacting with another human being at any given moment who is experiencing emotions and feelings, and they may or may not be very good at controlling them, understanding them, and thus what comes out of their body is not always as we intended. We are all guilty of that at some time, of saying the wrong thing, of getting frustrated, of acting out. Anything that's dangerous or really harmful really needs to be taken a serious look at. But ultimately, there are different ways that we communicate. When we are first dating, you are establishing communication frequency in the very basic level. This can be how often you message someone once you've established there's a bit of a connection in some way, a bit of an attraction, and you're messaging back and forth. Is that daily? Is that every couple of days? Is it weekly? Now, the idea of that last one sends me wild. I would not be dating someone that thought it was okay to kind of message back once a week. There are people in this world that exist that prefer that, do that, down to them, happy for them. Not for me. I am a daily texter. It doesn't need to be intense. And over time, once the relationship is established, it becomes talking on the phone, because texting on the phone is laborious. What could have taken literally 15 minutes on the phone will take a couple of hours over text, because it's slow and you're reading and you're thinking and you're typing, whereas talking out loud is live, it's quick, it's much more effective. But in the initial stages, to me, I'm still looking for someone to text every day. That's how I operate. As I say, it doesn't have to be in depth every day, but a little check-in, then a bit longer, little check-in. And the idea of that for some of you will freak you out. And that tells you that if we were dating, then our compatibility on just that communication front wouldn't be there. But this goes further as your relationship develops in terms of how you then communicate love and affection and feelings. This comes back to the idea around love languages, whether you choose to believe in that or not. I think they're a good place to understand what really speaks to you in terms of love. So I would associate with words of affirmations and of quality time. But I generally appreciate all of those forms of love that come in. They're the ones that mean a lot to me. When time to me is encroached on or is lost, I find that very, very difficult. It also comes back to your attachment style as well. So where I lean towards that anxious attachment style more, no wonder I like to talk every day. That's me understanding my communication style. Actually having conversations around why it is and where it comes from can be useful for someone to understand. Oh, it's not that she's being needy. She actually has this whole thing that this is the way she feels about that. And this is then a whole thing about communication in general. Are you going to be open? What are you going to build your relationship values on? And understanding how to communicate how you feel. Is the person very open? Do they close down when you talk about feelings? There's all these different things. And it then becomes very, very important how you communicate during conflict, of which attachment styles can massively play into, particularly if you've got two insecure attachment styles together, even more so if they're opposing insecure attachment styles. But understanding over time how someone fights, how someone can deal with the pressure of a conflict. Is it fight or flight, or can they see through? Can they see through to that other person just a tiny bit to be able to connect in a particular way that's going to be able to keep this relationship going? Conflicts are very, very normal in relationships. A relationship that doesn't have conflict, I think personally, is a bit more of a warning sign than a relationship that has conflicts, for sure. But it's understanding how each person can at least try and remain respectful even if the odd criticism comes out in not the most effective way, and this is what I mean by making mistakes. Understanding through the experience as a relationship goes on, how feelings are validated, how pressure and intense situations are dealt with, that's going to tell you a lot about a person and if you're compatible or if you just push each other in the wrong way, if you push each other's buttons, if you wind each other up and it's very hard to come back from conflict or you can't give each other what they need in terms of love. Lots of different elements to think about in terms of communication. The next one comes as no surprise, but it will be the sexual compatibility between the two of you. This might seem really obvious for so many people, but we have, as a society, developed the idea of the spectrum of sexuality. And we have the one end of being asexual all the way through to allosexual. Now, you might not have heard of either of those words. Asexual is becoming more and more common, but that means that you do not see a value, you do not require the need for physical activity. Those people just don't feel that sexual attraction. But let's get rid of the misconception there. Asexual people can engage in sex, and some do, some choose not to. That straight away is something that's going to determine a compatibility, because if you are of any sort of person that does require some physical activity, then even if someone doesn't have the sexual attraction to people, they can be romantically attracted to a person, but if they're lacking sexual attraction and do not want to engage with sexual activity, then that's not going to work with someone that wants sexual activity. But someone that doesn't feel those feelings per se but still will be happy to engage in sexual activity can still work in that way. At the other end, we have allosexual, which not a lot of people have heard of, but that is what we would deem the normal, which is that you have sexual attraction to other people, that you would like to have sex when you see somebody that you are attracted to. Now, you just might be like, but that's what everyone is. But they aren't. There are lots of different ways to identify. And in the middle, as I mentioned, we have demisexual, which is where I would sit with. And once I say it, even more people come along to this word, which is these people do not experience sexual attraction until they have an emotional bond with that person. Now, people suddenly go, yeah, of course you've got to have a connection. In my interpretation, that's even deeper. Like, there is no response. There is no, I can appreciate when there is a human specimen that, according to normal beauty standards, is beautiful, would be deemed sexy, if we're going to use that word. I myself don't look at someone, and this is why I don't look at celebrities and think, oh yes, because I go, Zac Efron is a beautiful specimen. What a fine man. There is no way that I'd want to engage with him in any way until I knew him as a person. And so to me, there's that block. Whereas other people would quite happily be like, that's my hall pass. They have that celebrity that they would allow. That's a celebrity that I would be allowed to sleep with. I don't connect with that in that way. So you've got this spectrum of ideas there of, do your sexual compatibilities work? And that's just on sexuality and the way you identify, even if you didn't realise they were options. But then you've also got the activities in the bedroom, all those different elements that come up. What do you want to try? Are you experimental? Are you more vanilla? Are you more reserved? Are you interested in there being other people around or not? Whatever it might be, that's going to be a big compatibility. I think that one's more obvious. I don't think the spectrum is always considered as much, but the words are becoming more and more frequent within dating, and you might have seen them as options on dating apps and be like, what is that? Sex is generally an obvious part of a relationship, but it's worth knowing that that's not the case for everybody, or sexual attraction per se, and it might mean that sex isn't really of a priority or even anything to do with it. But then also understanding that there has to be that compatibility there, the comfort, the style, where, when, how often? Don't forget how often someone would want to be engaging in sexual activity is so important to understand as well. So it's really complex. And we're only on the three parts here of compatibility. You've done all the other work before that. No wonder the numbers are so small at certain times. And I don't know if the researchers even thought about some of these ones. They did do 18 categories. But did they do some of that? I don't know. Let's move on to the fourth category of compatibility. This is the more traditional route of compatibility. This is lifestyle. We are looking at work patterns. We're looking at hobbies. We're looking at the idea of what they want to fill their time with in their life. And I'll come into a few little caveat ones that I think are really important. This is all to do with how you spend your time and how much time that leaves for romantic connection, how much it means that you can do together, and how much it means that you can maintain independence within that. It's important here to understand that compatibility does not mean similarity or the same. They just have to be compatible. So if someone does go to the gym every morning and you like a lay-in, that's still compatible because they can do that independently and you can do your lay-in independently. You get your time to yourself. But if then that repeats in the evening, like where is the time together? If you have so many different things in terms of your life that you do separate, where is the togetherness? If you both happen to go to the gym in the morning, then it might be something that naturally you start to do together. You change gyms and you go together, get a couple's discount for it as well. And that's the thing you do together. But after work, one of you loves to go for drinks with your friends after work. And one of you likes to come home and read a book. Each gets their time spent, one on their own, one with friends, but that's where they get their time. One person might like to see their friends and family three or four times a week, and one person wants to do it one to two. That can be compatible because the three to four times is okay as long as they've got time for their partner otherwise. And then the partner that doesn't want to see their friends so much has time for themselves. It can all work together. But it's also worth assessing money compatibility. Someone that saves a lot is going to find it very difficult for someone that spends a lot. That's a real one that we don't often think about and might overlook. Sometimes we can infer that from the way that they've progressed in their life, such as do they have a house? So they've got commitments in terms of paying for stuff. Then they're not going to have an awful lot to keep splurging unless they've got a very good salary. And that can also come through just the job they do. Are they in a career or are they in a job that's pay per hour? Whatever it might be, you'll be able to establish some of those things. Now, one of the ones that made me think about this as a whole episode was drinking compatibility. Drinking compatibility to me is one that we aren't talking about enough and don't think about, but if someone is a predominant drinker, which determines to me generally a particular lifestyle versus someone that is a teetotaler, I think the differences would be so different. There'd be such a gap that it'd be very difficult for those two people to really get along. One person may find that they're out a lot of the time because they like the social side of drinking, and maybe they're out till the late hours. Whereas the teetotaler takes a bit more of a casual lifestyle. They like time on their own. They like time to read. They go to bed early and they get up in the morning. Now, if someone's been out till the early hours in the morning, I can't imagine they're up early in the morning. I could be wrong, but that's my impression. And you get these two lifestyles that don't really work together. I dated someone that literally this happened to. I do drink, but not regularly. I am very low down on the scale. I would be at a one, not a zero. But to me, it just didn't click because when we went out, they always wanted to have a drink of some sort. And I don't mind a drink here or there, but I'm going to choose a Pepsi or a lemonade with my meal, not a drink, which is not a problem. But then as the night continues, there may be three, four, five drinks in and I'm not any drinks in, or at most one. And that has you energetically on different levels. Now, because I didn't drink until I was 17 or so, I am used to people being more drunk around me than not. So that doesn't inherently bother me, but there is a lifestyle difference. They want to go out, I want to stay in and chill, half and half. And it came up when me and my boyfriend were sat at the pub having a meal and I said, I'm so glad you're just not really a drinker. And he was like, yeah, it's just much easier, isn't it? Like your lifestyles just cross over. And that's what we started to discuss in terms of that difference. And in our case, similarity. I don't think you'd have to be a complete teetotaler and teetotaler together. I think you can have a blurriness, but I think each extreme is not going to work out. But something to consider if you've never given it any thought, which a lot of people on my Instagram poll indicated that they had never even considered, but a lot of people realised how important it was. And lastly, yet again, another obvious one, but that is relationship intent. Hopefully you agreed that during the commitment part, but it also might transpire that certain conversations hadn't happened yet. The idea around marriage and children is really important. There are less and less people getting married because of the cost. There's less and less people having children because of the cost. People are focusing on buying the house rather than putting money into marriages. They're also refraining from bringing up children because of cost, and they're delaying it till in their 30s. Some people want to have lots of children and want to do that early. Some people do want a career first, to have a life together first, and then to dedicate their life to children after. And some don't want that experience at all. You've got living arrangements. Living arrangements is becoming more and more flexible. The idea of having two homes, but spending some of it together. Financially, that might be better. From my experience of getting married and then divorced, it is messy when you have to separate. And where our life is now changing a bit more, it's a much more realistic approach to understand that you might not be with this person forever. You might be with them for a long time, but the concept of forever is dwindling. The concept that your marriage will end is 50-50 or so. You've got to be prepared for the fact that if you have children with someone, it might not last forever. And there's a 50-50 chance of you guys staying together. I don't know what the stats are if you didn't get married. I would imagine it's higher because it's easier to get out of. Sometimes we stay in marriages because of that actual contract and the cost that it is. It's just worth considering all of those things for the future, what you want. You might have the intent of staying together as long as you can, but we're very open now to understanding that people do change and that we do not have to stay in scenarios just because. The expectation to stay in a marriage because you were married has gone. The idea of staying for the sake of the children, we have learned, is not useful. It's good to stay amicable. It's good to work together and co-parent effectively. But to stay together when one or both parents are miserable will just have negative effects on the children because of the environment they're in. And that parent can't be the parent that they really want to be. So it's worth understanding all of these elements. Another side to it is the concept of monogamy. Monogamy is being questioned because of this commitment. If you do happen to commit to someone and want to raise children together and try and make that last at least their childhood, so you're looking at 20 years or so if you've got a couple of them, then maybe that one person that you parent with is not going to be the only person that you engage with sexually and romantically. The idea of non-monogamy done well is coming into play more because it offers more options. And if we look at other models around the world, it actually exists. That's how that works effectively. All of these kind of relationship intents, the fact that maybe a relationship is even desired, hopefully you've worked out very early on. That's the kind of one we trip up on very early. We get frustrated by it most because it happens so often. But I would rather know early on if someone's looking for something casual or I'm looking for a relationship. Let's get that compatibility one out of the way. These other conversations come up more and understanding what it means to each person to be a couple. What things do you want to do together? What things do you want to achieve together? And what things would you like to keep separate? How does the couple look? Understanding those values. All lots of things to think about. And no wonder it's so difficult for us to find someone that really works for us because those things are deep. Those things are difficult to find, all of these things that complement each other. Remember, it's not about them being the same. It isn't about if you both like Star Wars or you both like to watch I'm a Celebrity. It is about, can your lives be compatible? My boyfriend cannot stand reality television of the kind that I love. And we have managed to find some that works. Physical 100, thank you Netflix. We like SAS, Who Dares Wins, and we think Hunted is going to be a good one. There's a particular style of TV program / kind of reality TV that he enjoys, but my kind of like referring to I'm a Celebrity, Love Island, watching Sister Wives is not for him. He could not be less interested in those things. But are we still compatible in other ways? In plenty of ways. We both listen to podcasts in terms of hobbies. We both have particular plans for the future that we agree on. We both have a heavy reliance on growth and connection between the two of us in terms of our values individually. And then even when we've been asked to describe our relationship values, we have a crossover. Three of them were exactly the same. Two of them were different, but we appreciated where both people were coming from with that. We have some way that our lifestyles work together. He's more into health and fitness than I really am, but I dabble in it. We're both professionals in some way. There's that compatibility, and it is hard to come by. I know it's luck. You can't predict it. You can't tell where it's going to show up. But you do want to know your preferences, your likes, your wants, so that when someone comes along, you can truly evaluate if your lives are compatible. Please don't start bending too many of your compatibilities just to make it work, because you will be the one that ends up miserable. But make sure you think about these different types of compatibilities. It isn't just about the basics. It isn't just about the chemistry. It's about all of it over the long term, not just the short term. It's about looking at what your deal breakers are, your non-negotiables, all of that kind of stuff I go through in the Back to Dating program with my clients. We define them so that we absolutely know and work through that. And it's about tuning into your gut to really listen to what people are saying and go, you want to travel? I want to settle down. That's not going to work. And I denied myself that at times. We will all be guilty of overlooking something that wasn't right for us, something that didn't quite work for us. And we compromised ourselves for that. Don't do it. Learn about what's important to you in terms of those compatibility measures. And to recap, that's values, communication, sexual preferences, lifestyle, and relationship intent. If you are going through this and you've got any tips or experiences from trying to establish this whilst you're on dating apps or meeting people at speed dating, then get in touch. Drop me a message on Instagram and tell me how you're getting on with finding the right person for you. It is not easy, but keep on going and eventually you will find someone that it all just clicks with. Don't forget, there is that video training in the description if you want to grab it on working out your values, Or if you want to discuss this in detail, you can grab a free 15-minute dating game plan session with me. And part of that can be to just double check on your values and finding out what is most important to you. Until next time, everybody, keep celebrating single life together.